A.Y. Young is a rapper from Kansas City. He does outdoor shows that run totally on solar power. His goal is to provide solar power batteries for disaster relief. He's got catchy songs like this. But he didn't learn to sound like this by rapping along with the pros. He never heard rap music as a kid, so he totally made it up. Let's listen. Thought I'd never make it like the rappers on the TV screen. It was a dream, now I'm 19 and my flow boy is about to meet the world. Topanga, and all my doubters can stack up the odds. Jenga, but I'm greatness personified. I've been through the heinous, rigorous training. My city needs a savior, sick of all the gangs and the swag. Hey, I'm what you asked for. To my city, Kansas City, I've arrived. FYI, and most of y'all rappers couldn't measure to my eye. You're only about waist high, and that's a waste of a waste. You're taking up space, step aside. I'm confident, my confidence sitting all time high. So as I wave high, man, throw your hands in the sky and wave goodbye. So I say hey, wave to the world. This is my day, something like me.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and as the AY Battery Tour prepares for an appearance in Swope Park as part of the Open Spaces Festival, we're going to learn more about this Kansas City rapper on a mission. AY, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Tell me about the Open Spaces show. It's coming up October 21st, this Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. It's just this huge art experience that I've been very fortunate to be a part of. It was incredible to see The Roots, incredible to see Janelle Monae, who's a friend as well, taking the stage at Starlight. So I'm very happy to be a part of this big thing and to come do my thing.
We just heard what I think it's fair to call your big hit, Say Hey, and your Kansas City pride is really on full display in those lyrics. Tell me about your roots here.
I was born and raised here. I was homeschooled, so my mom taught me everything. Shout out to my mom. And so Kansas City is my hometown. It's the place that I, created all these ideas from. So when I created Say Hey, I just got off the X Factor TV show, and I just knew I wanted to say hey to the world.
You were on the X Factor TV show?
Heck yes.
Tell me more about that.
It was good. I got four yeses from the celebrity judges. So that's Ellie Reed, Simon Cowell. You know, we did the Sprint Center TV audition, you know, all the lights, the whole day recording. It was great. So I really learned a lot about the music business. And that helped me create Say Hey. And that really was the segue into also starting the Battery Tour, just getting into the entertainment business, learning how it works. And being told no a lot.
So we are going to get to that. But the other thing on full display in this song that we just heard is your understanding of what makes something catchy. How did you learn that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. Honestly, it just was natural. I'll be very honest. I wrote Say Hey in like an hour. You know, I was, because I used to be a nerd a little bit. People would pick on me because I was homeschooled. And I was just like, you know, I'm going to say hey to the world. But I also wanted to empower people to be themselves, right? To be you, to say hey to who you are, right? To be outlet. I was forming that idea of an outlet, which is, we'll talk about that later with the Battery Tour. So it just came to me naturally. I'm all about when you're listening to a song or when I'm listening to a song, I want to be able to sing it with the artist. So,
I want to get more into this homeschool thing because I understand that, you know, you weren't able to learn rap by listening to great rappers. You had to learn it in another way because you weren't exposed to rap as a kid.
I know, that's the crazy part.
So talk about that.
I know. Well, I mean, the thing is, like I said, I was homeschooled, and my mom, you know, my mom and dad are very like conservative Christian, you know. So I wasn't allowed to like watch much TV, one soda pop a week. And like when it came to like rap music and stuff, we weren't really allowed to listen to that. And back then there weren't guys like Lecrae, people like a lot of people like that were doing like the Christian rap. At least I didn't know of it. So I didn't even know what rap was. So I used to write poetry. I would write about what I saw, which is really cool to see what like Mr. Hoffman's doing in Kansas City and about the divide. And I just saw the NBC report or whatever that was. Cause I used to write about that divide and how you could be on Truce and see this, but you could drive and see the Platte. So I would write about what I saw. And
where did you grow up?
I grew up right off 39th Street, 39th and Highland. So I'm right by Truce and Paseo. And, you know, so I'm experiencing these different sectors of Kansas City and the difference between the cultures and all of these different things.
How young did you start writing poetry?
I started writing probably when I was like, I feel like this is old, like 15.
What do you remember? I mean, do you remember some of the images in those early poems?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the very first poem that I wrote, which ended up being my first song that I didn't release. So technically, I'd say, hey, but it was like, I was like, ain't it funny how you can be in the hood 1 minute, drive a couple of blocks, it's like a chameleon hit it. Because like you could be literally like on Truth, a couple of blocks, and there's the plaza or these really nice houses. So I remember seeing that and writing that line.
Do you remember how seeing that made you feel? As a Kansas Cityan and a young Kansas City?
Honestly, I was confused because I never really saw color or difference in people. You know, like, that makes sense. Like, my mom never, she taught me to love everyone and everyone's the same and everything's equal, right? So I...
And you grew up maybe sheltered from
And I grew up sheltered from everything. Like, I didn't even really know how to talk to girls. So you hear me talk, like, I have songs about, like, how, you know, like the song I Might Steal Your Girl is funny. Because
we're going to hear that one
soon. In high school, dude, I was joked about a lot. And this guy on the basketball team, because I was really good at basketball, though. And he had this really hot girlfriend. I'm like, oh, I'm going to steal your girl, bro. Like, I thought that in my mind. Never stole his girl. Girl never even gave me a look. But it was that moment of me, that's what made me write the song. Like, oh, I'm sick of you joking about me, bro. I'm going to steal your girl.
So you went to an actual high school for high school.
Yeah, so I ended up not till junior year. So I ended up going to Lincoln College Prep junior year. So my whole life, you know, homeschool, junior year, go to Lincoln College Prep, and boom, you know, social norms, just talking to, seeing females. I mean,
learning,
you know,
that
everything
at this stage in a person's life and in sort of the social scene that is high school seems like that would be. It's high school is an extreme time in people's social lives, to just land there with no preparation for how to, like, be part of, like, a class of people in school.
Yeah, it was, I mean, you could say I had brothers and sisters. So my mom homeschooled all four of us, so it was four of us kids. So I did have interaction with people. And then there were some times that I did, like, church functions. But at the end of the day, there's nothing like high school. And yes, so I got hit with everything really fast.
Do you remember some of your early observations and, like, realizations?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I turned it all to songs, like, and even like for my new album. So I'm privileged, I'm really honored, I'm working with a 5-time Grammy winning producer, his name's Brian Kennedy, because I've been we've been working on a lot of new music. And in this new album called Hello Again, which will come out hopefully next year, I talk a little bit more about, like, some of those experiences and not having the cool J's, not having a cell phone when everyone had one, you know, all these things. And what, so I remember everything vividly. Yeah.
Can you give us just one little tidbit that it's like, this is what high school looks like to someone who just dropped in here?
Like a song? Like a lyric?
Well, no, a memory.
A memory.
Yeah.
Like, of what high school looks like?
Yeah, from your point of view at that stage, having been homeschooled and then landing in junior year.
It felt like a foreign country. It felt like probably what some of those foreign exchange students feel like when they walk into a place and everyone's speaking a different language. Everyone's speaking English in Lincoln Prep, and like they're speaking English, but they're speaking through social things that I don't understand because I'm used to speaking English. So even the way I spoke was so different to people that I was like foreign, or I wasn't cool a lot of times, or whatever. Because yeah, so there's so much with the English language and even location and things like that. So I learned a lot about, which has honestly helped me as I started forming the Battery Tour and I'm in different cities and states, to really acclimate myself and be able to connect to everyone, different types of people. I think I'm glad that happened because now I know how to connect and get plugged in.
What made you want to rap in the first place when you didn't know what rap was?
Yeah, so I never even, in the term rap, I don't even use the term rap. I think now I really say I'm an entertainer, and then I'll even dive into saying I'm an entrepreneur and like a micro influencer and things like that. But for me, rap music in general, I figured out it was like a universal language. And I always wanted to change the world and make an impact on people. So for me, music was a way to influence people. And so that's just what I saw it as, not rap. Because now I sing rap, I do a lot of different things. So it's not just rap. It was more like music is a way to make a change within people, better than basketball, because that's what I went to UMKC for, was basketball. I got, you know, to play there, and that was my main thing. So, yeah, music.
You've done a lot. How old are you?
I just turned 27, yeah.
Man, okay. Yeah. So before we hear another song, I am curious about your process of building those first songs that sound to other people like rap, although that's not what you had in mind.
Okay. Like, you want to just
ask me? Yeah, the process. Just how you got started, did.
So musically, and every song is different. But what I really like to do is create an idea. So I'll create the idea, whether it's on the keyboard, whether it's on like FL Studios or something like that, and then bring talented musicians. Kansas City is fortunate to have some of the best musicians, I think, in the world. And so you bring great musicians to play, you know, what you played, but add their own taste or feel to it, right? So I'll create a really good structure where it's not... they don't deviate too much. Make sure that it stays within the pop format, because I am a pop artist. And it's really cool to see creative talents mesh together for collaboration.
But weren't your earliest songs, I am getting at this first beginning in your musical development, when you were basically reading your poems?
Man, straight up. So, okay, I had a little help. Just my brother, okay? So my brother AJ, who I was also on the X Factor TV show with, right? Guitar player. The L.A. Reid, when he played the guitar, he nicknamed him the Black John Mayer. So that's how great AJ is. So when I was doing the first poem, I'm so bad at saying that. See, I even say words weird still. When I was doing my first lyrics or whatever, AJ started playing the guitar to what I was saying. So we were developing records, and he was able to like play to the tempo I was saying or whatever I was feeling, play to specific words. So he's a very talented player. So I got blessed to have somebody that's like a savant on the guitar that can develop records from the bottom up. So shout out to AJ.
Okay, let's listen to another song. This one is the one you were talking about where you land in high school and you're thinking about... So this is...
Yes.
Yeah.
All the bullies out there that are joking about people, though, we might make a song about you and try to steal your girlfriend.
Okay, let's listen.
What's good, what's good, what's good? You're tuned in to Insane Radio. We got a caller on line one. Are you there?
Yes. Who is it?
Well, who is this?
Well, I'm calling because...
Calm down. Let's not jump to the conclusions. Bro, just chill out. Let me explain what's going on. Hate to make it so blatant, but your girl about to be taken. Hope you're open for change. Single life is what you're facing. And I can't really help it that she's feeling me. I follow your voice since I walked up in the beauty me. Now you started thinking crazy thoughts about killing me. All because your baby told you that she want to chill with me. Shoot, you need to take a chill pill. You can't come in between love, man. It's feel real. Ha, okay, I'm kidding. I still am every weekend. Asian or Puerto Rican. We take whatever we can.
You are just like totally jamming out to this song right now. Has it been a while since you heard it?
Well, I mean, shoot, I perform it all the time. Yeah, but it's been a while since I heard it.
So we've heard a little bit about the backstory of this song. I might steal your girl, and I just want to acknowledge my white person delivery on that.
There's the chorus.
Steal your girl. I might steal your hey. Yeah.
So, what in your mind, what is the purpose of music? What is the purpose of entertainment?
That's crazy question.
It is.
Wow. The purpose. I don't know. I feel like music is life itself. I feel like it's a universal language. I'll say that a lot throughout the day and in general. And I think it's meant to connect cross cultures. Bring people together. I think it's made to have a positive impact, but also to be relatable, to get people through hard times, things like that. I just think it's made to bring us all together. At least that's how I try to use it, like a vehicle.
I'm Gina Kaufman talking to a local musician who goes by AY. He's performing at Open Spaces this weekend as part of his Battery Tour, a series of solar-powered concerts to fund solar-powered batteries to be sent off for disaster relief. More on that piece of it in just a minute on KCUR's Central Standard. I I'm Gina Kaufman talking to a local artist, I might call him a rapper, he does not, who goes by AY. He's performing at Open Spaces this weekend as part of a battery tour, a series of solar-powered concerts to fund solar-powered batteries for disaster relief, as we were just saying. And AY, I need you to explain the whole battery tour thing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So the battery tour, essentially, we literally do like a mini community-focused music festival, and it's powered by batteries and solar energy.
And these are usually outdoors, right?
Usually all outdoors, involve the community, a platform for the artists. So we host artists. Some people have called it social music movement. So sometimes it's a dance party, open mic nights, the artists perform, and then a concert. I also perform my music and things like that.
So describe in some more detail what will happen at the Open Spaces version of this, or I guess the Open Spaces stop on the battery tour.
Yeah. So Open Spaces will be cool because there's also a stage there. So I, as AY, the solo artist, like I said, the battery tour, I've told people, is a platform for me as well. So I'll, you know, perform some of my original music on the stage. Then I'll probably move from the stage to off stage to a battery tour, battery powered concert setup that'll involve the people and it'll be interaction.
So these are not usually like in show venues. These are like, you've done this outside by the J.C. Nichols Fountain, for example.
Everywhere, yeah. Actually, all over America. I just got back from New York, but Burbank, California, a lot of places. So, yeah, I literally set up a mini music festival. It can be up to 8 to 10 hours. And it's a show for, by, and with the people. Sometimes, you know, and involved. It's just incredible. And it's all powered by batteries and solar.
So explain the battery piece of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what we're the mission part of it now, what we're doing is we're using the proceeds from the battery tour to, and we're donating those to send solar power batteries to people that need them. So my partner and I, Connor Hazelrig, developed the Sunshine Box. So it's like a solar powered battery. It's like, looks like a suitcase. And we actually just did a battery tour where we raised enough to send to someone who needs access to electricity around the world.
So take me back to the beginning of this idea. What inspired you to say, I mean, meeting this person and coming up with the idea to just thinking of music shows and what you can do with them pretty differently?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was just, I was addressing a problem. So my solution to my problem, you know, I would try to open up for Wiz Khalifa. I would try to play at the Sprint Center, the Midland, right? Local venues. And I was told no, or hey man, do you have a million followers? Or how many records have you sold? It's like, I haven't sold any records, but I got this song called Say Hey. So I was like, you know what? I'll make my own venue. I'll do my own shows. So in trying to figure out how to, you know, do a concert, because I didn't want to be just like a guitar player, small setup acoustic. I wanted a big, loud show. So I figured out how to power a concert with a full band without using electricity, which is the help of the sun and solar energy. And so fixing that problem, I started the battery tour.
How did you get hooked up with the guy who invented the Sunshine Box?
Oh, yeah.
Had he already invented it?
She's a woman.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
It's incredible. Connor, yeah. Connor. So, I got hooked up with Connor like a year back or so. I was involved in the Fast Track program, Kaufman Fast Track. Shout out to Kaufman. And graduated that. And, you know, I think I had met her through my mentor, Landon Young. And she had been doing great work around the world because in doing the battery tour, I've uncovered a lot of problems and other issues. And one is there's over a billion people across the world who don't have access to electricity, right? And the fans are supporters of the battery tour. They call themselves outlets because it's powered by the people. People will donate. They're like, hey, we're your outlet. We're powering the tour, right? So that's when I kind of envisioned, well, the whole world is full of outlets, right? That just need to get plugged into the tour, you know? And so knowing that there's over a billion people who do not have electricity and need it, people in Puerto Rico right now with the disasters, over 200,000 people who do not have it. So I knew that music, using the battery tour, which has been bringing people together, you know, was, I feel like, a way to help address those issues. So I just really added a little bit more to the mission of the battery tour, which is to get the world plugged in now. So now we're taking proceeds from the show, you know, from the mini concerts or the festival, and we're literally donating it to send out these batteries.
How do you plan out this whole thing? I mean, if I imagine being in my own city trying to put on a show that's in a space not really built for a concert, but making my own, that sounds hard, but it sounds actually like almost impossible to think about going to a city I've never been to and figuring out, hey, like, here's an open field, or like, here's a well-trod, like,
sounds crazy. And, it is crazy. And there's been plenty of small towns in the U.S. that it was just crazy. I'm in some weird country town or whatever, or like a small, tiny whatever, and then like people looking at you crazy because they don't know who you are, right? I mean, we've done this all grassroots and with the people. That's another reason why we say the Barry
Tour. So you reach out to people who live in places.
And social media. Like, social media is, like, if I'm in a random town in the United States of America, we're going to say, hey, the Barry Tour is here. Maybe we have a little bit of money to boost the post and for more people in that area to see it. But it is completely grassroots. It's completely charged by the people.
What is the craziest thing that's happened to you in the course of this tour?
I mean, I thought, like, for me as a solo artist, it was pretty dope to have, like, I talked about Wiz Khalifa or T-Pain. It was dope to have them come by my show and then say, hey, man, you're incredible. I want you to open for me. That was tight. Besides that, when you talk about 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds dancing, or you see people from over, like, all over. When I see, you know what? The most amazing thing is at the Battery Tour, like when we're on the Country Club Plaza or we're in Burbank or whatever, or wherever we're at, and you see, like, all cultures, all types of people, all ages, all demographics together, maybe dancing to the Cupid Shuffle or jamming out to one of my original songs or whatever, or supporting a random artist that they just discovered at the Battery Tour. Those moments, to me, are the best ones.
You know, something that just occurred to me is that when you talk about people being together who maybe we aren't used to seeing all in one spot, all at one show, I wonder how much of that has to do with it not being a venue that has maybe some kind of baggage along with it about what kind of person goes here for shows.
It has everything to do with it. It forces us to be together and to not even look at, like, you know, because even with the traditional concert setting, one thing I'm a pro at is breaking down the fifth wall, right? So that takes, I think it's called the fifth wall, the fourth wall, where you kind of break
down that. One of those walls.
That's one thing I'm really good at as an entertainer, but it's really cool because, like, financial situations can create barriers, especially at, like, a concert. You spend $1,000, you'll be sitting here. You spend $200, you're over here. So it kind of just destroys that idea
of being all in it together.
Exactly.
You know, you have used the word dope a lot.
And
I bring that up only because something I've noticed in the songs I've heard of yours, the language, no matter what the subject matter, the language is very innocent.
Of course. I mean, well, innocent, you mean clean.
Yeah.
Like, your kid can listen to it.
But also, some of, like, even talking, and maybe this is because you wrote that other song when you were in high school, basically. But even talking about, like, stealing someone's girl, the way you talk about that sounds almost like a kid imagining adult content. You know what I mean?
Maybe that's how my brain
there is.
I don't freaking know.
I'm curious about your sort of philosophy around that stuff.
I'm not a drinker or a smoker. I think women are beautiful, so I don't like to objectify them in that sense. I mean, I always look, you know, I always just feel like if you're a writer, you can write about a topic with more class. If that makes sense. I'm not trying to diss other artists. I mean, some people be like, yeah, man, something to something to something. But it's like, I like to take thoughts and ideas. Like, there was one day that I wanted to be single or wanted to be loved. So, Want to Be Loved is what you hear in this album. Want to Be Single, you might hear in my next. But so I wrote about wanting to be loved, but it wasn't something super sexual or degrading women. It was just the way I look at things, I guess, is maybe considered different. That's cool to know.
I want my music
to be accessible. And yes, I'm glad. If it's refreshing to you, that means a lot.
So we are going to very shortly be listening to another one of your songs. And you mentioned before that you don't think of yourself as a rapper. And on this other song, it is more of a sung thing. Can you just talk about the sort of range of music that you like to play and perform and write?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I've opened for Shaggy, that's reggae. Wiz Khalifa's more harder rap. Flo Rida, This Direction. You know, that's why I like to label myself now an entertainer. You know, now I just did Wyclef Jean. I'm very dancey now, so I'm on like that Chris Brown tip of dancing now, trying to work with dancers. So I think I have a really wide range, and I think you need to have that to reach all people. I think you need to have a wide range. So I can sing, I can rap, I can dance, I can perform, I can entertain. I look up to idols like Prince, Michael Jackson. I really modeled a lot after Prince with how I'm creating my symbol and my brand.
You mentioned Janelle Monáe earlier, and yeah. Janelle Monáe has this sort of, people have described her as the heir apparent to Prince.
She used to hang with him.
Yeah. I mean, he had a cameo on one of her albums. Like, what, when you think about someone like Janelle Monáe being mm-hmm. from Kansas City, do you ever wonder, like, what it could have been if she could have had the career she has from here? It's interesting to me that you remain based here with all the mm-hmm. national and international work you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I think that we're 5 or 10 years away from where I want this city to be, but this is what I believe in. I always believed in this, and I believe that this city always needs like an artist that's like a pop champion. We need to start bringing people that are accomplished, whether they're athletes or actors from Kansas City, together to help cultivate the city. So I.
What do you mean by that? How would that work? So people who have gone off elsewhere, they need to like form a union of former Kansas City and famous people?
Not necessarily a union, but here's the deal. If you're in Chicago, when Chance the Rapper was coming up, Common's like, yo, Chance is the man. Kanye's like, yo, Chance is the man, right? Chance is bringing together actors, whatever, whatever. Like, different cities like Chicago, Seattle, what I've noticed from their cultures is when people are on the come up and different things like that, everyone kind of wraps around them. Oh, X stars wrap around. I don't really see that much in Kansas City.
It seems like we wait for someone else to tell us this is actually good.
Yeah, we're just slower, and also the business is not here. When I'm in Cali, when I'm in New York, this is a flyover state. Like, people call it from the industry a flyover state. I mean, I can't walk into the Windus agency, into the CAA agency. I don't know if you know what these are, but these are major agencies in the music business and the acting business. They're not based here. Their offices aren't here. So there's a lot of, I believe, infrastructure change that should happen, and so hopefully it does.
Well, we're gonna go out on a song called Creep Creep. A couple words you want to say about this before
yeah.
we go?
I think life is a journey. I think you can do anything you set your mind to, so believe in yourself and take a step every day. Creep Creep. Peace out.
AY, thanks for being here today, and good luck with this whole thing. You'll have to keep us posted.
Yeah.
The AY Battery Tour hits Swope Park at the Open Spaces Village this Sunday at 2 p.m. if you want to check it out. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and coming up, we will listen to the latest episode of My Fellow Kansans. It's leading up to the governor's race in Kansas this November, and this week's focus is on moderates in Kansas. Don't go away. I look past, I'm fat from the gas. My passion has lasted, latched on to my dream. And I've been where you've never been. And you can watch me win, you can watch me win. See, I've been where you've never been. And I can see the end. Yeah. And as I creep, creep, I can see the distance closing. All my problems been eroding like I'm floating on an ocean. As I creep, creep, my dreams are getting closer. I can feel it like emotion on this trolling roller coaster. So I can say. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And what everyone's said about Kansas for decades has been that it's a red state leaning way over to the conservative right. But let's say you're a moderate Republican. What's your best bet if you want to see a future Kansas that reflects your values? For one politician, the answer to that question comes in the form of a red pickup truck. This is the latest episode of My Fellow Kansans, a podcast from the Kansas News Service hosted by Jim McLean. Let's listen.
What did we forget? Oh, yeah.
It's the last day of July. Jim Barnett and his running mate, Rosie Hansen, who's also his wife, are packing up the red pickup truck he bought especially for the campaign for one last swing through central and western Kansas before the Republican primary for governor.
Now, maybe you know where you're going. Jim kind of knew.
I do. We're going to Concordia, Beloit. I do have to look at my phone to tell you exactly. Oh, Russell.
Hansen is a retired Foreign Service officer who never expected to be running for office, though she says it's been a lot of fun, a kind of honeymoon.
We've seen the most amazing landscape, met the most amazing people. I've enjoyed every trip out. There's so much potential if we just elect the right governor.
Barnett is a lifelong Republican. She isn't.
But I am now, and I've embraced the party or at least I've embraced what Jim stands for and what we stand for and what the state of Kansas needs.
You know, we got the Eagle endorsement.
I did know that.
Garden City Telegram, Pratt, Ottawa, Greensburg.
Dodge City.
We've gotten a bunch of newspaper endorsements.
What does that tell you?
We've got the right policy.
So they closed up the shutters and the blinds in the house, arranged a week's worth of suit jackets on the hanging rod across the back seat of their truck, and hit the road. I'm Jim McLean, and this is My Fellow Kansans, a podcast from the Kansas News Service. On this episode, we'll talk about how Kansas's shift to the right has made nomads of moderates like Jim Barnett, fiscally conservative and socially liberal folks who for decades held the upper hand in Kansas politics until they didn't. They've been wandering across the political landscape, licking their wounds, regrouping, to perhaps someday try and reclaim the Kansas Republican Party. Someday came sooner than later for Barnett, who jumped into the 2018 primary for governor.
In order to succeed and be in the office of governor, I think the best shot is on the Republican ticket.
Others, including former Republican Governor Bill Graves, are jumping the aisle and backing Democrats in 2018.
And I think Laura Kelly is the best person to be at the wheel at this time.
And a few simply left the party to try and form a brand new one.
Yeah, it's funny. I've not started a party before, and I'm not sure how the process will work out.
The flipping of the Kansas Republican Party from its center-right traditions to hardline conservatism started in the early 1990s, triggered by the Summer of Mercy abortion protests in Wichita. We talked about that in episode 2 of My Fellow Kansans, but here's the short version. Those protests energized conservatives and fueled their takeover of the Kansas Republican Party, starting with precinct committee people at the grassroots level, and eventually the legislature and the governor's office. Kansas Senate President Susan Weigel, a Republican conservative herself, pointed to the 1994 legislative elections as producing the first really big change.
94 was the sweep. The conservatives won the entire House of Representatives, and we threw out the speaker, and Tim Schallenberger became speaker, and I became speaker pro tem.
Tim Schallenberger from Southeast Kansas was the first hard right conservative elected speaker of the Kansas House. 4 years later, he ran for state treasurer and won. And after one term there, he ran for governor in 2002 with a tax-cutting message that pretty much every Republican nominee has echoed since.
My plan would be lower tax rates, lower corporate tax rates, personal income tax rates, contrary to what the legislature is talking about today, lower property tax rates, contrary to what you hear from a spending legislature. Lower those rates, cause economic development to occur, and really work hard on getting those businesses to locate all around Kansas, not just in Wichita and Kansas City.
Well, Schallenberger won the GOP primary with that message, but lost the general election to Democrat Kathleen Sebelius.
Lost by 7 or 8 or maybe 7.5. And of course, I keep thinking about that. I say it's a bad candidate. Tim says it's bad staff. So who knows for the reason.
Alan Cobb broke into Kansas politics working for Koch Industries. He now heads the Kansas Chamber, which has close ties to the Koch brothers. But in 2002, he was the guy running Tim Schallenberger's campaign.
Now, I think what we could have done as a campaign, had Bill Graves and the moderates jumped on board immediately, would that have helped? Absolutely.
Bill Graves in 2002 was the outgoing two-term governor, and he was slow to endorse Schallenberger.
Mid-late September, and it sent such terrible signals.
With only weeks to go until the election, Cobb and Schallenberger, campaign manager and candidate, were summoned to a meeting at a farm outside of El Dorado with a group of moderate Republican state senators who were also threatening to withhold their support.
Basically, they were telling Tim and I, you make the case why we should endorse you. It's astonishing that you make the case why we Republican senators should endorse you, the Republican nominee. Again, this is a state treasurer and speaker of the House. This is not some guy who doesn't know what he's doing and that they didn't know.
Yeah, but Schellenberger saw himself as the quintessential Republican, a conservative.
I don't run from the label. I've been told I should. I've been told, oh, you don't want to be called conservative. It doesn't bother me. I'm proud to be conservative. I don't mean conservative to mean some ultra-right side of the party. I just think Republicans believe government should be watched, that free enterprise works if you let it.
But out there on that farm near El Dorado, the Republican state senators told Schellenberger that he was too conservative for them.
But what does that say about the dynamics that were going on inside the Republican Party at the time and looking back on
it? I was surprised. I shouldn't have been. That the divisions were deeper than I thought. That, yes, there's people that disagree in degrees on the level of government or certain things about school finance, whatever. But obviously those were deep. And I think it was partly that Tim was not part of the club. He wasn't one of those old-fashioned traditional Republicans.
While the split was frustrating Alan Cobb as campaign manager, the longer Governor Bill Graves and other Republicans withheld their backing of Schellenberger, the better it was for the Democrat, Kathleen Sebelius. And yes, she's that Kathleen Sebelius, who after serving almost two terms as governor, went on to serve as Health and Human Services Secretary during the rollout of Obamacare.
Following the primary, Bill Graves did not endorse the Republican nominee for a month and a half. And each day that went by was a great gift because he gave the great indication to everybody that it was all right, to
cross party lines.
So I certainly had a Republicans for Sebelius effort.
The chair of the Kansas Republican Party at the time was a guy named Mark Parkinson. He didn't cross the party line in 2002. He helped Schellenberger, but he took a lot of heat for that from moderates in Johnson County, the Kansas City suburbs.
Now, so he quits the Republican Party, and I don't know if you remember when he said...
I remember him quitting. I don't remember what he said.
He said there'll never be a moderate Republican nominee in Kansas anymore.
When she ran for re-election in 2006, Mark Parkinson switched parties to be Governor Sebelius' running mate. Meanwhile, conservatives were on the rise in the legislature. That conservative faction was really in the ascendancy when you were governor. How did that affect the way you governed the state?
I'd go back just a step. It really became a pitch battle when Bill Graves was governor. Because as far as a lot of the very conservative Republicans were concerned, he wasn't a Republican.
How much time do we have here, Governor?
To tell you the truth, Jim, I've got lots of time. You know, I'm retired, and I'm home just being a news junkie, watching confirmation hearings and fallout over Bob Woodward's latest book.
And you're making news. You're making news today, too.
Well, that's not something I aspire to do anymore.
I know. Nonetheless, Bill Graves did make news by being the first in a cascade of prominent Kansas Republicans to endorse the Democrat for governor in 2018.
My father and my mother. Laura Kelly is the only Democrat I have ever endorsed for public office. And the reason I'm doing that now is because I believe so much is at stake in the state of Kansas, and it's going to take someone with some very capable leadership skills, someone who is willing to work across the aisle.
You still consider yourself a Republican?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I was a two-term Republican Secretary of State. I was a two-term Republican governor. But there are moments when it's not about party loyalty. It's about literally loyalty to nation and state and what best serves nation and state.
This split in the Republican Party, it happened a bit before you became governor, but it became really pronounced when you were governor. What was it like attempting to govern when you had this split? How difficult did that make things for you?
It was very difficult. You know, we... up until the Brownback tax package, we had always touted ourselves as having passed the largest tax cut in Kansas history. That ought to be something that would make every conservative Republican stand up and cheer. But there was criticism from the right because the package wasn't even bigger.
The divisions in the Republican Legislative Caucus continued to deepen while Sebelius was governor. And that had to impact on school finance, on a host of other issues, how you were able to get things done or not.
Well, it did, although I would say when I was elected in 2002, there still was a working coalition. It was slimmer. I mean, I never had a Democratic legislature. I never had a Democratic House or Senate when I was governor in the two terms I served. But there was still a broad enough coalition of people who, at the end of the day, wanted to move forward. And we ended up passing a tax increase to support schools, getting that through with a majority Republican legislature.
So moderate Republicans were still teaming up with Democrats, as they always had, but the divide within the GOP was widening. Thomas Frank wrote about the tension in What's the Matter with Kansas? He attributed it to people elevating social issues above economic interests and voting that way.
I think what also happened during that period of time was that there were significant money interests. Koch brothers at the lead. The Koch brothers were pretty invisible, but very much active in Kansas politics, particularly at the local level. You know, Thomas Frank's thesis doesn't really address that, but I would say it's like watching water ballet, where you watch the bathing caps on top, but what's happening down below is really beginning to tilt the whole battlefield in terms of how much money was pouring into these races, how opaque that was. Nobody really knew where that was coming from or how it was coming in. The verbal battles, the visible battles, were about abortion or about evolution. But what was really happening, I think, to shift had to do much more with business interests, regulation, rolling back the role of government.
Jim Barnett, a member of that GOP, pulled right by anti-abortion furor and split apart by moneyed interests, challenged Sebelius in 2006. He picked Susan Weigel, by then his colleague in the Kansas Senate, to be his running mate. The same Susan Weigel who had been so excited when, after the Summer of Mercy, conservatives took control of the Kansas House and elected Tim Schallenberger as Speaker.
In 2006, I thought I'd try to unite the Republican Party with some more centrist, moderate-type views, combining with Senator Weigel.
I'm proud to be here as well with Senator Sam Brownback of the great state of Kansas. Jim Barnett running for governor, and he needs your vote.
I thought maybe we could bring the Republican Party together. Now, it wasn't possible. It didn't work, obviously.
Even a presidential rally on the eve of the election couldn't get him the win. Sebelius and her running mate, former state Republican Party Chair Mark Parkinson, swamped the Barnett-Weigel ticket with almost 58% of the vote.
Nations, honored guests, and of course, fellow Kansans. I'm so honored to again have the opportunity to come before you as governor of this great state.
A decade later, Barnett, now a Topeka doctor, was watching from the sidelines. In 2016, voters revolted against Governor Sam Brownback and his legislative allies, blaming a budget crisis on their failed tax experiment. Barnett saw an opening. He bought a red pickup truck and, with his wife, Rosie Hansen, started exploring the possibility of running for governor again, this time as the lone, unabashed moderate.
We've traveled almost 2 years now. I think we'll be over 84,000 as we head out today, or close to that, on the truck.
You knew what, full well, what how Kansas politics had evolved, and you saw an opportunity here to go out and be another voice in the campaign trail, out there to give Kansans a choice, a very specific choice, fiscally conservative, socially progressive.
One of the things that we hear when we talk with audiences around us, some will say, well, you're not talking about guns, you're not talking about abortion, you're not talking about illegal immigration. We like to talk about economic growth, what we could do as governor, lieutenant governor, what changes we need in education, why Medicaid should be expanded. Those are the topics we really like to go visit about, and you know, they're expecting the other, but we see that as our only pathway to winning and the only way we would want to win. So my approach this time is to try to squeeze through the Republican primary, hoping the conservatives just beat the crap out of each other, and that polling is wrong. And then I think if I can win the primary, I feel very comfortable winning the general.
Well, the polling wasn't wrong. Barnett finished third, but it was a distant third. He captured just under 9% of the vote, far behind the winner, Secretary of State Kris Kobach. The self-described full-throttle conservative edged Governor Jeff Collier, a fully committed but less charismatic conservative, for the nomination in the closest election in Kansas gubernatorial history. Scott Morgan tried it Barnett's way. Armed with a resume that includes work as a staffer for Senators Nancy Landon Kassebaum and Bob Dole, he challenged Kobach in the 2014 primary for Secretary of State, but he felt unwelcome when making the obligatory drop-ins at county GOP meetings.
Going to Republican gatherings and listening to this rosary that people had to say before they ran for any office. I am right to life from conception to natural death. I am pro-gun, Second Amendment, constitutional carry. I am against all taxes. We have a spending problem, not a revenue problem.
Morgan, who again was running for Secretary of State, couldn't commit to the orthodoxy, and he got only 35% to Kobach's 64% in the primary that year.
If you don't cross yourselves on those issues, guns, taxes, abortion, you have no place in the Republican Party, particularly in the low turnout primaries, because nobody votes in the primary except for highly motivated, driven, I would call them fringe voters that come out. We all say, well, we're going to get moderates out. We're going to get other kinds of Republicans out. 20 years of data show that 17% of the adult population vote in primaries. Of that, 12% of them are voting in the Republican primary, which is really what most people pick from in the fall election.
And you're talking specifically about Kansas here.
I'm talking about Kansas. Everything I talk about is Kansas. Now, I think this is, you can extrapolate it to the country. But between that running against Kobach and then having Donald Trump be nominated and then actually win the presidency and then enduring his strangeness in the White House, I had heard too many people say, both parties have lost me. I'm lost without a political party. Boy, it'd be nice if we had one in the middle, but every smart person knows new parties don't work. And then I just sat down and wrote out this 24-page thesis, business plan, whatever you want to call it, on why I think it would work.
Part breakup letter, part manifesto, it was Morgan's blueprint for starting a new party. A party because for people who have jobs and kids and things to do, it's hard these days to figure out which candidate stands for what before you head into the voting booth.
You need that brand when you walk in there because on the ballot, you're looking down, you see D, you see R, you don't see mainstream coalition. You don't see any of these other groups that endorse candidates.
Yeah, those coalitions then work for more engaged voters. And again, it's not a pejorative, it's just people who are paying attention and who walk into the voting booth, you know, pretty much educated about who they want to vote for and why.
Right.
For everybody else, the party brand is like a quick guide for voting. So Scott Morgan has been bouncing from one living room to another, living room stocked with snacks and libations, enlisting people to help gather signatures to get the party of the center on the ballot.
And we have 6 months to collect 18,000 signatures, and we really need more than that because you're going to have duplicates, you're going to have people that aren't valid signature. I mean, it's, and Kris Kobach is the one who gets to bless it. So we know we need quite a few. Yes.
Scott, do you have some one or two suggestions on the best way to gather the signatures, like standing outside of supermarkets or anything?
Well, I'll be real honest with you. I think the ones that will make this happen are the really busy people who are receptive to the thing. Are you happy with either of the political parties? No. As we get further along, we're going to have notarization parties, which is even more exciting than this party. You might want to pencil those in.
They haven't yet secured enough voter signatures to officially register the party of the center, but Morgan and his team are still plugging away with sights now set on the 2020 election. Another expat Republican is focused on the here and now. To the dismay of some, independent Greg Orman is smack in the middle of the 2018 race for governor.
As we travel the state and talk to voters, I'm really gratified by how they're responding to our message. I think the more voters who hear what our plans are for Kansas, the more voters we're going to get coming our way, and I'm confident we have a path to winning in November.
It's a narrow path at best. Greg Orman's quest to break the partisan hold on Kansas politics and his potential role as a spoiler. That's next time on My Fellow Kansans.
That was Jim McLean with My Fellow Kansans, a podcast from the Kansas News Service based here at KCUR. It's edited by Amy Jeffries and mixed by Matthew Long Middleton. We're playing episodes every week leading up to Election Day in November to help all of us put the current campaign season in perspective. And that's a wrap for today on KCUR's Central Standard. You can listen back to anything you heard or didn't at kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, tune in for a conversation about a side of poverty we don't hear much about. Hygiene comes with a price tag for women of all ages, but young women in school face particular struggles when they can't afford it, and so do a lot of other people. Period inequality, tomorrow at 10. This show is produced by Melody Rowell with a whole crew behind her, but it is Kathleen Pointer's last day, so I'm going to give her a special shout out. She's jumped right into her new role on Central Standard and quickly become so valuable to us. We know the same will be true as she throws her talent and energy into a whole new job outside the walls of KCUR. So good luck, Kathleen. Not that you'll need it. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for Up to Date.